Hi, all. These are generally conversations between adults after the children have left the table. The language can be spicy and the subjects can get saucy. So if you're ready, you are listening to The Southern Fork, a podcast that hosts kitchen chats with some of the most interesting people in the culinary South. I'm your host, Stephanie Burt, and I'm always hungry to learn more. Let's dig in. Southern Fork is supported by Nuit Belge. Nuit Belge is an evening of spontaneous pairings of Belgian beer and local fare, as interpreted by Charleston's best chefs and restaurants. Last year, I had the opportunity to partner with this event as well, and I can tell you that it was one of the best I attended in 2016. The beers were delicious. The pairings were very thoughtful, and our Charleston chefs brought it when it came to the food. I got second helpings of most things and left full and happy. I have no doubt this year is going to even be better, so I'm definitely not going to miss it. You shouldn't either. Visit NuitBelge.com to score your tickets early for this unique event on March 25th at Memminger Auditorium and use code SOUTHERNFORK, all one word, to save $10 on tickets. Cheers! Are you ready for an all-day rosé discussion? This wine varietal has taken the hot and humid South by storm, and just so we don't get mixed up thinking it might be that other pink wine that comes in a box, I invited advanced sommelier Patrick Emerson to talk about it. He's been a fixture on the Southern Bev scene for years, spent a long tenure as beverage director of Slightly North of Broad and its family of restaurants, served as the beverage director for Charleston Wine and Food Festival in 2015, been in Southern Living, Food and Wine, and he's even won the Bombay Sapphire National Cocktail Challenge. These days, he's focusing on his two companies, Curated Selections and Communion Wine Club. And when it comes to Curated Selections, his rosé portfolio is definitely a bright star. All that fancy talk aside, he'll tell you that wine is just grape juice that's going bad, and that it's not meant to be used to impress others with your knowledge. It's meant to be enjoyed. So this Friday, Patrick and I go rosé all the way. Welcome to the Southern Fork, Patrick.
Oh, thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Well, it's a beautiful spring day today, yeah. Even though I think it's going to be colder later in Charleston this week. So I felt like today was the day we should talk about rosé.
It's a perfect day for rosé.
Well, I'm really glad that I decided to come see you then because I consider you my rosé expert. So today we're going to talk all about rosé since it's taken definitely, I would say, the country by storm, but specifically the South. I believe that I'm seeing it all the time, all day rosé, all kinds of things.
Yeah.
So I know that you've been a part of that, but before we get into all of the things that are about rosé, and we have a few sips and we have some beautiful grades of pink in front of us, why should I be talking to you about this?
Well, it's funny, you know, it hasn't always been like that.
Mm-hmm.
When I started in Charleston as a sommelier, I always used to praise rosé for its qualities for our climate and our food and our location. And we would buy a case of rosé and we'd buy it about March mm-hmm. or April when the new vintages are released. And I would look at our inventory in September, and we would have 11 bottles left over.
So you only could persuade one person, and that was probably half of your staff.
That
right?
person was me and our team, and we would do it on training. And,
right.
You know, as much as I talked it up, it was a non-starter.
Right.
And to see where it's come from, you know, really a wine that was not valued at all to all the interest in it now, it's just really exciting. It's a category.
So why has it really grown? Is it just word of mouth, knowing that it's something different than that other pink wine that we've heard of?
Well, I think there's a few reasons. You know, I think generationally, we've moved on from the other pink wine, you know, mm-hmm. White Zinfandel. And I think that the older generation wouldn't be seen dead drinking a glass of pink wine because everybody would assume you were drinking, you know, box wine or White Zinfandel.
Right.
Sweet wine. And so it really, having been incredibly popular, got a real stigma attached to it. And just the bottom fell out of that market. And then I think with sort of a newer generation coming in looking for new exciting categories of wine, mm-hmm. Rosé is definitely a category that hadn't been explored. And so there's this just treasure trove of wines to discover. And, you know, we now import something like 20, we have, I think, 25 this year that we've brought in. And out of our top 10 wines, 5 of them are rosés.
Wow. So you're an importer.
I'm actually an importer and a distributor. I'm more of a distributor than an importer. We import a few things ourselves, but we get most of our wine from suppliers who already import.
Because I just know you as Patrick.
Yeah. Right.
Patrick the wine man.
Well, you know, when we started curated selections 2 years ago, going into our third year now, we started in October. Mm-hmm. And because I personally love rosé, we brought in a bunch of rosés, which was a complete rookie mistake because the traditional wisdom was that nobody drinks rosé after Labor Day,
right.
You know, that going into the fall and the winter, and all the other distributors had run out of their rosé. And just because we're new and we're stupid, we brought in quite a few different ones. And it turned out that over Thanksgiving, there was a lot of interest. And over Christmas, there was a lot of interest.
I think I wrote about that.
Yeah, and we were the only guys in town who had rosé because we were the idiots, you know.
Right,
so,
right.
That was just a bit of dumb luck for us, and it's just continued to build on.
So, as a, you know, I was a red wine drinker, really, before bubbles and rosé, and now I'm more bubbles and rosé. It's lighter, it doesn't tame my teeth, and really, frankly, the quality is better as a category in a lot of ways to me, or at least the wines that I'm getting poured, which I'm a little not your usual, you know, taster, I guess is the word, but.
Well, I think you have to be a little bit careful about that. That's a lot of junk out there. A lot of inexpensive rosé that is made mostly from the Seigneur method, which is where you bleed off the watery first press of the wine to get more of an intense red wine. So in one way to make your wine more concentrated is to get the free run juice off. And it is rosé because it's been just sitting on the skins for a few hours or a couple of days. And so producers started doing that, and they would make it almost as a byproduct and then start selling it. And people started to really enjoy it, you know.
So how do we know a good rosé? How can we pick a good rosé for our grilling party, our cookout, our, you know, Mother's Day dinner?
Yeah. Well, there's certain regions that I always look for the type of rosé that I like to drink. I like to drink rosé that is medium to light bodied, not too intense. You know, there are rosés out there that are really pack a punch, and you might as well be drinking a red wine like that. And certainly, you know, I think France is a great place to start for wine in any category. It's really where I go to for my you know, exploration. And the region of Provence in southern France on the Mediterranean is probably a great place to start. And it is the benchmark, in my opinion, of great rosés. Then within Provence, there are separate regions as well. There's a place called Tavel. We got a Tavel here that we're going to try in a little bit.
Any moment.
And then, like right now, right? and then there's another region that I really love called Bandol. Mm-hmm. That's within Provence. It's a region that's right on the coast. It kind of gets beaten up by the wind and the Mistral and the sun. And they specialize in a grape called Mourvèdre. Mm-hmm. And this is a super intense rosé. You know, most people think you just want to drink rosé of that vintage. Like everybody's clamoring for 2016 right now as they're starting to be released. But wines from Bandol, and there are a few other rosé regions, can actually age pretty nicely and are better after a year or two. Mm-hmm. But that's the exception, really, rather than the rule. In general, I think you want to drink rosé and enjoy it when it's young and it's fresh, and there aren't really that many that are going to improve. You know, and I think where we're going to go to next in the rosé category is people realizing that it's not just pink wine, that it is just like red wine.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, rosé is red wine. It's just red wine that has, or from red grapes that haven't had as much time and skin right. contact to extract the color.
Which is why it just felt very familiar when I tasted rosé.
Yeah, as a red wine drinker. And if you're living in a climate like ours, or certainly in the South where, you know, I mean, it's going to be 80 degrees this weekend and it's middle of March, you know. Yeah. If you like big reds, it's tough to drink those when it's hot outside.
It is.
Especially during the day, at least.
Right. And so
it's a great wine for red wine drinkers to drink when it's in a hot climate. I think that's why it really works so well here in Charleston.
I agree. And it's also really comforting to have that rosé at a dinner or a gathering where you have red and white drinkers, where you're trying to be more of a crowd pleaser.
Yeah.
Because I think both sides of that Venn diagram, they feel more comfortable trying rosé, at least here in Charleston.
No, and if you're going to have one wine with a group of eight at a dinner party or something like that, it's a great category because it's so versatile with food too.
Mm-hmm.
So you can drink rosé with fish, you can drink it with meat, you can drink it with something off the grill, you can have it with salads. I personally love to drink it at lunch, mm-hmm. outdoors at a cafe.
Well, I
like
would
that.
Too if yeah. I didn't have to.
Yeah, we have a rule.
If I was French and not working for a living and yeah. just walking around and shopping.
Oh, you'd be surprised, I think, to see how much rosé is consumed in town at lunchtime.
That is true. Yeah. That is true. I mean, I do meet with a few PR people and we have a rosé.
Well, generally speaking, it's a little bit lighter in alcohol too,
right.
which helps with mm-hmm. the lunchtime thing. And, of course, you don't have to have a whole bottle. You can have a glass and you'll be fine for the afternoon.
And it is great with salads. I think salads and grilled fish, I've just really, really enjoyed it with that. So while you're pouring us the first one, and we'll talk about it, and ladies and gentlemen, I believe this is going to be bubbles.
Oh, it is bubbly.
It is bubbly. So this is the...
This is a wine from France. It's from the Jura region, which is a region in eastern France, close to the border of Switzerland. And it is a sparkling wine made of Pinot Noir. We like to specialize in all of the really weird regions.
But that's so fun. I mean, because I mention this to you all the time. I would say that I'm comfortable enough writing about cocktails. I'm comfortable enough writing about beer, and I've studied that, and you know, and I feel like you can write in print, but I just enjoy tasting and enjoying wine, but I'm intimidated to try to get my head wrapped around it. How did you fall down this rabbit hole?
Well, it's a huge category, and the terrific thing about wine is that you're never really going to scratch the surface.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as much as you study, as much as you taste, as much as you work in the wine industry, it's really just a never-ending process. And of course, even if you think that you've got your head around it, everything changes. There's a new vintage, and you've got to learn, well, what happened in the Rhone in 2015, and was that a good vintage or anything? So I always laugh when people say they're a master of wine, a master sommelier. You know, I mean, it's a terrific title to have, but I think they would be the first people to admit they're not a master mm-hmm. at all. It's a category that continues to evolve and grow.
But
you can't really master it.
No, but when I come to your house, I don't bring wine.
I know, and that's such a shame. You know, I'm always when we had a party recently, and everyone was like, "Well, I can't bring you wine." I'm like, "Please bring me wine." You know, I'd love to see stuff outside of our book too. So. No, I love it as a category, as a lifestyle. You know, it's a fun, exciting category that never gets old.
It involves travel.
Yeah.
It involves good taste.
Yeah.
It involves, you know, family-owned businesses in a lot of times.
And there's a saying, wine doesn't grow in ugly places. You know,
right.
If you're going to a place that's growing wine, it's going to be a beautiful part of the world to visit.
Patrick never goes to Minneapolis for work in February.
No, I don't see the need to that. But I would love to go down to Argentina.
Right.
You know, to the Andes or something, or go to South Africa, and of course they have a 6 month different vintage to us
right.
in the Southern Hemisphere. So you get a lot of winemakers who actually make wine in one of the other hemispheres, up or down, and then they'll go to the other one to visit and learn how the other guys are making it on the other side of the world, and they just live in constant summer.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, tell us about this wine that we're tasting.
Well, this is a producer called Desiree Petit. It's a tiny family production. father has two sons. The father's now no longer involved in the operations, but he's still alive. He planted, now he's actually the grandfather, but he planted in the 1940s. And he, wow. This is from a 1.9 acre vineyard.
This is straight up delicious.
It's just tiny. Oh, isn't it fantastic?
Oh my God.
I know. And of course, we can't get a whole lot of it, but... you know, we've had tremendous success right now with sparkling rosés.
Right, which I did not know existed as a category until I was served. And then I was like, wait, this gets better? Oh. Because anything is better for me with bubbles. I mean, I'm a Pellegrino freak. I love, cava.
Yeah, and... no, I always have the sparkling water when it's offered as opposed to still water. I love bubbles too. I mean, how can you not? And I'm just so excited to see such interest now in sparkling rosé. Of course, it's always been available from Champagne. But the thing about rosé is it's grown anywhere in the world and made anywhere in the world where they're growing red grapes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just confined to France. You know, I mean, everybody all over the world has been making rosé for hundreds of years. But we're just discovering them now in the States from the more obscure regions.
Wow, and it's beautiful in the glass, and it does have a little bit of leg. I mean, I see some legs here.
Yeah, well, it's Pinot Noir, and definitely got some nice fruit to it. You know, typically in rosés, you'll find categories of red fruit, like strawberries, raspberries, cranberries, rhubarb, those kind of flavors. You normally don't see it any oak influence on the wine. I mean, it's very unusual to find an oak barrel-aged rosé. And they're normally just clean, refreshing, light, and delicious.
It is delicious.
Yeah. Cheers.
Cheers. So we're not chugging this. We're actually doing the official thing of tasting and pouring off.
Well, maybe we'll chug the last one.
But when you're tasting wines, you are going to be tasting them at a different level than, say, I or someone just off the street. But... how can you train your palate? How does somebody train their palate to get better at this?
It's hard work, and really, just like anything else, it's all about practice. Right. The more you taste, the better your palate's going to get. Nobody's born with like a brilliant palate. You know, there is this category of humans who are known as super tasters.
Right.
But it's a very tiny percentage of humans.
I don't want to tell you how many chefs have tried to tell me they're super tasters.
And whether you believe them or not.
Yeah, as they smoke cigarettes.
Yeah, well, yeah. I have to tell you, I just love tasting with chefs.
Mm-hmm.
They're my favorite people to taste with because they're in the kitchen all day tasting. You know, they always got balancing the sauce or the dressing, and they have the most brilliant palates. Mm-hmm. And so I'll have chefs who'd say, oh, I don't know anything about wine. I'm like, you know everything about wine because wine is all about balance.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're making a balanced dressing or a balanced sauce, then you're going to be able to tell me whether you think it's great or not. Right. So that's the essence of finding a great wine.
Mm-hmm.
Is it balanced between the acidity in your mouth? Does it make, you know, is it making you salivate? Is there one component that really sticks out that's sort of awkward?
Mm-hmm.
Or when you sip it and you get a nice long finish and a long sensation, that's also a sign of a really high quality wine.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to be expensive.
Right.
You know, that's also why we love these weird regions and kind of specialize in these funky grapes and everything, because they haven't been discovered yet. And even though there's a tiny amount made, there's just, they're not expensive.
Status.
It's not, right. Exactly. Yeah. We really avoid those wines that have already been discovered or, you know, you see these cult wines from California and selling for very high prices. And to me, there's just no way that they are that good of a wine to be $1,000 a bottle, you know?
Right. I don't know if there can be anything that's $1,000 a bottle that's going to live up to that.
There are a few out there, but generally speaking...
I'm never going to get them unless the Southern Fort gets some really interesting sponsorship.
We'll have to get some samples for that, yeah. I mean, there's some classic wines that are expensive for a good reason, you know, some Burgundies, some Bordeaux, but it's the general economic rule of supply and demand. You know, if something's famous, and there's only a little of it, it's going to cost you a fortune.
Right.
So, you know, as poor people, we can just enjoy wine and still enjoy it. And I always refer to it historically. You know, wine has always been the drink of the people. Wine has always been what, you know, the peasants drank. And when, if you were a peasant in Italy 1,000 years ago, wine was an important part of your, just your nutritional daily intake to stay alive. I mean, there's a reason that they famously would drink wine and their lunch and then get back to work. It's because they give them a boost, you know.
And, right.
It's an important calorific intake of the day.
I have a question for you, one of many. How do you feel about the frozen rosés that we're seeing on cocktail menus or using wine in cocktails?
Well, I have nothing against it at all. I think it's fantastic. You know, any variation you can get on making wine into something interesting, getting people to drink wine, I think it's great. So, look, if it's on a stick or if it's... in a martini. I mean, I think it's fantastic.
There is frozen rosé popsicles right now. I got a press release about that.
I think I saw them. I think I saw them being advertised too.
No,
I'm all for it. And anything that gets people exploring wine as a category of beverage that's accessible, I think is only great for them and for people and humanity and, of course, the industry.
Well, let's try the next one then.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
this is your baby.
This is my baby. This is the just landed today, 2016 X Rosé.
Oh, how exciting.
AIX. So
I have the 2015. It's time.
You may have seen this in town at a few places. It's become very popular, but we really have only been in distribution with this wine for 2 years. So it's become our number one selling wine. Mm-hmm. And
it has a wonderful... pretty graphic label that you can find.
It's
easily.
A beautiful package.
Right.
And it's from the city of Aix, Rosé, Aix-en-Provence. Not many people in the States seem to be familiar with Aix, but it's actually the fifth or sixth largest town in France.
Oh.
I think they keep it secret for a reason because it's just so beautiful. It's a university town right on the Mediterranean.
Well, all the Southern Fork people are going to start flocking there now.
No, I highly encourage them to do so. It's just a fantastic place to go. And, of course, you'll be drinking rosé on the beach there. We love this wine. The winemaker has become a good friend. And, we've had a lot of success with it. So it's a perfect wine to pour by the glass and have as an aperitif or as a wine with lunch or dinner for a variety of foods. You know, typically wines from Provence tend to have a lighter pink color. They tend to be very delicate.
This has a very floral nose compared to the other one that we're tasting them side by side.
No, it's very aromatic for sure. And you definitely get some nice flowers and rose petal on there as well. Some cranberry notes.
That's why I like it, because of the rose petal.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other one had a lot of raspberry and rhubarb.
Yes.
To me.
Exactly. Yeah, it's got a little bit more depth. So this is all about finesse, delicacy, smoothness, and man, can you pound this wine? It can get a little dangerous, the X for sure.
Especially when you serve them in those huge.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's a marketing guy as well, and you know, he's a very serious winemaker, but he made his money as a marketer, and he's done an incredible job. So we have a 15-liter Nebuchadnezzar that we haul around with us. And it comes in a 9-liter, a 3-liter, a 6-liter, and a magnums. Magnums are the best way to do it.
Right.
As my friend says, magnums say you care. So if you go to a party and you take a magnum, you know your friends are going to be
That's true. They're going to be like, come on in.
Yeah, exactly. And you'll get invited back as long as it's good.
Well, you know, I was going to bring a magnum of $2 Chuck to your party. And then
that might say you really don't care. I don't care twice.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Yes. Beautiful, soft, just a lovely wine.
Yeah.
So... what's going to happen now that rosé is really being picked up by, I would say, the masses? I mean, by the time it gets to someone like me, you know, I've just got over Rioja. Like, I thought that was the most amazing thing ever.
How very 90s of you.
I know, right? Patrick's cutting me down, people. Cutting me down. And I'm always like telling my friends, bring Rioja to our party.
No, I think the next thing is that people stop thinking about rosé as rosé. And, you know, it's like saying white wine or red wine, you know, and start really discerning between regions and varietals and different characteristics of, mm-hmm. Of the grape and see it in much more depth as they mm-hmm. explore the different styles of rosé, because I mean, they go from sparkling all the way down through to sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So how did you, besides just tasting and studying as we try this next wine, because we're going through these things and we're going to have to stop at some point, but
I've got a whole warehouse right there full of rosés.
That's right.
Yeah, it's going to be a really long piece.
I was so excited about the rosé. I didn't even tell where we're sitting. We're sitting right on the edge of North Charleston in Patrick's warehouse, which is, it's really hard to not be distracted on the way to his office because you pass all these boxes and you're like, I just want to remember what the names of these things are as I pass them. But, but how, what would you suggest? Is there, you know, test? Is there a book that you love? I mean, you...
Do you mean just in general about
wine? Yeah, about Somme. About if somebody's really interested in becoming a Somme, what's the fast track really of that?
Well, it's all about self-study, really. Mm-hmm. You know, there are plenty of different courses that you can take, of course. But I think I always encourage people to start with the Wine Bible. Mm-hmm. By Karen McNeil. That's a terrific book. It covers the world of wine. It's a really interesting read. You can pick it up anywhere and just read a page, and it'll talk about a history of a region. It'll talk about the food. There's a lot of fun facts in there. You know, it's not a heavy, encyclopedia or mm-hmm. dictionary about wine. And, you know, she goes into some serious depth as well as recommending wineries to visit. So if you're, you know, taking a trip, you can look it up, and it'll right. even give you the phone numbers for the wineries to give them a call and say, hey, we're in
or
the neighborhood, can we
come
by? Or you can
just beg Patrick. You can be like, hey, Patrick, I'm your friend.
Come on. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, if people want to learn more about Patrick and curated selections and his beautiful world of rosé that is only part of the portfolio of import and distribution that he has, you can go to thesouthernfork.com. There will be links there. Also, there are going to be images as well of the three wines that we tasted today so that you can see them. You can see what the labels look like. You can see the different colors. And we've left some wine in the bottles.
Yeah, we've got some work to do.
But thank you so much for allowing us to taste and have a great spring, teaching us all about rosé. I once had 50 rosé wines from this man and a rosé tasting, and it really changed what I thought about rosé.
Yeah, well, it's a great category, and it's fun. You know, you can't take it too seriously. You're just going to have a good time
with
it.
And you're kind of fun, too.
Well, you know, try to be. Well, thank you so much. It's been
thank
a pleasure.
You. Great.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Cheers.
You've been listening to The Southern Fork. I can't wait to bring you more culinary conversations, but in the meantime, I have one question. Are you gonna eat all that?